Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Trucker Detective, Highway Robbery and Other Tales of the Open Road, by Ido Van Belkom. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Prologue, Hitting the Road.
All right, Mr. Jack of Clubs, where are you?
Mark Dalton didn't take his eyes off of the computer screen in front of him. He was just about to complete his game of solitaire and had been looking forward to seeing the cards fall and bounce all over the screen. Whoever it was could wait.
It's open.
A short, bald guy in an off-the-rack gray suit stuck his shiny head into the office.
You Mark Dalton?
Are you a bill collector?
No.
Then I'm Mark Dalton.
That seemed to satisfy the man, and he stepped into the office, closing the door behind him gently as if he thought someone was sleeping down the hall.
I need a private detective.
Mark smiled and almost said, "Then what the hell are you doing here?" But he managed to keep the joke to himself.
Well, you've come to the right place.
The man stepped further into the office, taking a seat across the desk from Mark, but seemingly in no hurry to talk.
What can I do for you?
It's my wife.
I'm a detective, not a mind reader. What kind of a problem are you having with your wife?
I think she's seeing someone else.
Oh, yeah?
As a private investigator specializing in divorce cases, Mark had been through this routine plenty of times before. No one who came to him was ever in a real mood to talk about their problems, so Mark usually had to prod them with a few tried and true phrases.
Yeah, and I think she's having sex with someone else.
Is that so?
I'm fairly certain of it.
You seen her with somebody?
No.
The strange phone calls in the house?
No.
Is she staying out late at night?
Not really.
Then how do you know she's seeing somebody else?
Well, the last few times we've, had sex, she didn't seem very interested.
Mark stared at the man, managing to keep a straight face, but only just. The guy was very wide around the middle, well on his way to 300 pounds, and fooling no one with that ridiculous bit of comb over. If his wife wasn't interested in having sex with him, an affair was the end result of her disinterest, not the reason for it. But to be fair, Mark had no idea what the guy's wife looked like. Maybe she wasn't a looker either, and the two of them just simply grew apart. Simple as that. Besides, Mark knew he shouldn't be too quick to pass judgment on the guy since his own marriage hadn't been going too smooth lately.
Huh. That sounds rough.
Yeah. It's very rough. Especially since we've always been so good together.
Mark nodded. It was obvious the man was hurting.
So what do you want me to do?
I'd like you to follow her for a couple of weeks. Find out if she's seeing someone else for sure.
Do you want video?
I want proof, one way or another.
Video will cost you more.
Just get me proof.
All right, I'll do my best.
And then the man took out his checkbook and cut a four-figure check just to get Mark started.
Call me when you have it.
Mark took the check, glanced at it, and then flipped it onto his desk as if he could do without the work. Even though he hadn't taken on a new case in weeks, no one was ever impressed by a private detective who was thrilled about the prospect of a job. The trick was to look like you were always in demand, even if you weren't.
I'll be in touch.
If I'm not in, leave a message.
The man left the office, and when Mark was sure that he was down the stairs and out of the building, he picked up the check again and stared at it for a full half hour, a wide grin on his face the whole time. The guy was pretty helpful keeping Mark posted on the whereabouts of his wife. He'd call every other day or so to let Mark know if she was going anywhere special. Usually she just went to the mall or to the market for groceries. But one night he called all in a panic, saying he was sure tonight was going to be the night. Mark thanked him and called his wife Julie to let her know he'd be working late.
That's fine, Mark.
Julie usually wasn't too happy about his working nights, and had asked him on more than one occasion if he were having an affair. Mark knew he spent too many nights away from her when he was working, but it was the nature of his business. What else could he do?
I'll be home late tonight, too.
Hey, you working late?
Mark didn't like to pry into his wife's affairs, since it would suggest that he didn't trust her, but this time he was too curious to let it slide. It was just so unlike her to be pleasant about his not being home in the evening.
No, just meeting a friend.
Girls' night out, eh?
Yeah, sort of.
All right, well, enjoy yourself, and I'll see you when I get in.
When will that be?
Now, this seemed more like it. But Mark had learned long ago never to give her a definite time, because she would use it against him if he were later than he'd said he would be.
Well, when the job's over, hon.
Okay. See you then.
Mark hung up the phone, thinking it had all gone a little too smoothly. Something hadn't been right about that exchange. When Mark had finished school, his father had tried to persuade him to become a full-time truck driver. He'd driven for his father summers and some weekends during school, and even off and on between detective cases. But driving with Dad had always seemed, well, boring. Mark craved excitement, and that had been the main reason he decided to become a private investigator. The money was okay when there was work, but the best thing about being a detective was that no 2 days on the job had ever been the same. He'd caught all kinds of people in the act of being unfaithful, and some others who were just downright dishonest. He'd brought a few bail jumpers to justice and even assisted the police on a few high-profile cases. Sometimes it seemed as if there was an adventure waiting for him around every corner. Some of them were real edge-of-your-seat nail-biters, while others were more low-key, or just plain strange. Like tonight, for example. Turned out that the guy was absolutely right about his wife. She had been cheating on him, seeing someone on a pretty regular basis, but that was only half of it. Mark picked up the guy's wife as she pulled out of her driveway, then followed her all the way across town to one of the cheap motels by the lake. He wondered why someone who had money for better would settle for a flea bag like the Lakeside Motel, but he wasn't complaining. The Lakeside was ideal for his purpose because all of the rooms were on the ground floor, and getting tape of the woman and her friend would be a piece of cake. She took room 6 at the end of the building, which was as good as Mark could have hoped for, since that room had windows on 3 sides, and gave him a good shot at finding one of them clear enough to shoot through. He waited 15 minutes for the woman's lover to arrive, but when no one showed, he figured the woman was meeting someone who was already in the room waiting for her.
Well, I guess it's showtime.
He got out of his car, a tiny palm-sized camera in hand. The first window faced the parking lot and had the blinds drawn across it. Second window was clear, but looked straight into an empty bathroom. The third window, the one right on the end of the building, was perfect, since it faced a stand of trees that separated the motel from Lakeside Road. Mark could hide in those trees and remain unseen to anyone passing by in the lot or on the road. If Mark could just get a peek into the room through the window, then he would be in business. It turned out business was booming. Probably because there was nothing but trees outside the window, the woman hadn't bothered to draw the curtains closed. She also left one of the room lights on so she and her lover could see what they were doing. Mark was grateful for the light. But if he were meeting this woman for a liaison, he would have asked for the light to be left on as well. And that's because the guy's wife, this short, fat, bald guy's wife, was a real hottie. She had a mane of red hair that fell in big curls over her shoulders. She was also thin in some places and not so thin in others, which gave her a figure that was as shapely as any centerfold model's. And to top it all off, she moved in a way that suggested that she had sex often and enjoyed it every time she did. No wonder the bald, fat guy had been on the verge of tears. When the woman laid down on the bed, Mark took the opportunity to make sure that his camera was recording properly. He rewound the tape he just shot and checked the picture quality. It was a bit dark, despite the light on inside, but the man's wife was easily recognizable, and that was all that mattered. When Mark resumed shooting through the window, the guy had already come out of the bathroom and was lying face down on the bed. She was busy giving him a slow and sensual massage, making sure she got her hands on every inch of the guy's body. Mark probably had enough right there to satisfy his client, but he'd found that judges and juries were always more impressed by 3 hours of tape than they were by just one. And so he kept taping. Watching this guy's wife massage her lover, it wasn't too hard to figure out what she'd been looking for in a man. The guy on the bed was thin and had pretty good muscle tone. In fact, the guy's body was a little on the effeminate side, and that maybe made him a better lover, or at least a more appealing lover than the woman's husband had been. When the massage was over, she kissed him long and deep, letting his hands explore her body in what looked to be a romantic prelude to a long and exhausting night of sex. Then the woman lay down on her back, spreading her legs slightly as he began to kiss her all over. As Mark watched, something seemed wrong. Totally wrong. The man she was with wasn't a man at all, but another woman.
Oh, man.
The bald fat guy was in for one hell of a big surprise. But as Mark continued to watch, the scene got even more wrong. The woman who was supposed to have been a man looked familiar to Mark. More than familiar, in fact.
Julie?
At that moment, Julie looked up at the window and there could be no doubt.
Julie!
After that night at the motel, the divorce seemed painless. Julie had a new life now, with a new lover, and she seemed uninterested in holding on to much of her life with Mark. They split their assets pretty much down the middle. Julie took what she wanted from the house and left the rest behind for Mark. He wasn't all that interested in keeping mementos of his married life either, and got rid of everything, including the car, less than a week after the divorce was finalized. The next day, he walked into the Peterbilt dealership on Rutherford Road and ordered a 4-year-old Model 379. A few days later, he took possession of the rig, christening it Motherload. And a week after that, he was hauling a trailer westward, putting as many miles as he could between himself and his old life. His marriage was over, and he was through being a private investigator. But something told him that the adventures he longed for would find him on the open road no matter where he went. He wasn't disappointed.
Chapter 1. Highway Robbery.
Highway 17 was as clear as the sky that filled his windshield, and it looked like it was going to be another beautiful day. Mark Dalton checked his mirrors for oncoming traffic one last time, then shifted his Peterbilt into first. He signaled left and began the run through the gears, taking his time to bring the rig up to speed. Although he'd let the engine warm up for a good half hour while he'd done his circle check, it didn't make sense to push it if he didn't have to. His Peterbilt 379, which he affectionately called Motherload, was already 6 years old, and if he treated her right, she just might be with him for another six, maybe even longer. Mark smiled at the thought. He hadn't always been so careful with his women, but he learned from his mistakes. Just 2 years ago, he'd been working as a private investigator, making a good living, videotaping men who spent 3-hour lunches with their secretaries and women who spent more time with their personal trainers than they did in the gym. The money had been okay, but the work had taken up a lot of his time, especially nights and weekends. That had become painfully obvious when he set up his camera one night outside a motel room on the lakeshore and discovered he was taping his own wife in bed with another woman. That little episode had taken a lot of the fun out of being a private detective, and suddenly Mark needed to find something else to do with his life, at least for a little while. He'd been driving off and on for years whenever he wasn't working on a case, so as soon as the divorce was finalized, he sold off all his assets and bought a 92 Peterbilt with a fully equipped sleeper. Driving a rig was just what he'd needed. He could work as much or as little as he wanted, and when and where he wanted. And perhaps most important of all, he had only himself to worry about. And even that seemed like one too many at times. But old habits died hard, and he wasn't adverse to getting involved in other people's lives, maybe even sticking his nose into a few places where it didn't belong. Like that woman walking along the side of the highway up ahead. What's her story, Mark wondered. What's she doing out here in the middle of nowhere?
Well, there's only one way to find out.
He slowed the rig as he came up behind her, and she turned to face him with her arm extended and her thumb pointed in the direction he was headed. He slowed the Peterbilt further, pulled off the highway, and came to a stop on the gravel shoulder. He waited there for her, watching her grow larger in his mirror. Before she reached the truck, he turned on the CB and switched it to Channel 9, on the off chance there might be some news about the girl being a runaway or an otherwise missing person. Pretty was the first thought that came to Mark when the young woman's face appeared through the passenger side window.
Hi.
Where are you headed?
West.
Just west?
Yeah.
Now that sounded odd to Mark. Usually someone all alone out in the middle of nowhere was headed somewhere. They might have been dropped off by someone headed someplace else, or been walking between rides, but they always knew where they were going. He looked at her for a few seconds.
All right. Hop in.
Thanks.
She didn't flash him too much of a smile, and that wasn't right either. Someone walking alone for a while is usually thrilled to get a ride. She struggled to get into the cab, and while she tried to make herself comfortable, Mark noticed that her shoulder-length ash-blonde hair needed combing. She had a white t-shirt on that had some sort of tropical fish on the front of it. The shirt was spotted with something dark and, like her black denim pants, was in need of a wash. The black and white running shoes on her feet had mud on them, and she wasn't carrying anything with her besides the gray summer jacket she had draped over her arm. Mark waited until she settled into the seat before heading back out onto the highway. When they were on the road and up to speed, he waited for her to start up a conversation, but she didn't seem to be too interested in talking. What she did seem to be interested in was the highway in front of them, which she scanned like some eagle on a perch.
So, how is it that you came to be on the highway this morning?
My car broke down.
Huh. I don't remember seeing any cars on the side of the road for at least 20 miles in either direction.
I got a ride from somebody.
Now, that was possible, but if she got out of someone's vehicle, then she must know where she's headed, or at least where she's not headed. And even if she did get a ride, that wouldn't explain why she looked so beat up. There were cuts and scrapes on her face and arms, and her dirty white t-shirt had a big tear on the left shoulder. And despite her seemingly tough exterior, Mark couldn't help but notice that there was a look of fear in her eyes.
Look, Miss...
Jane.
Don't tell me. Your last name's Smith.
How'd you guess?
Okay, Miss Smith. A lot of what you're telling me just doesn't add up. Now, either you tell me something I can believe, or I'm just going to let you off at the next crossroad.
Attention all drivers. Attention all drivers. Just want you to know that the OPP are looking for a woman who skipped out on a motel bill outside of Huntsville. Seems she also left some guy behind in pretty bad shape.
Mark glanced over at her, and she raised her eyebrows in an awkward look of surprise.
Does that mean he's dead? Can you ask him?
Mark wasn't sure what her interest in this guy was, but he obliged her.
Is the guy in the motel room gonna make it?
Affirmative. He's been worked over pretty good, but they figure he'll pull through all right. The girl the cops are looking for is white, mid-20s with shoulder-length dirty blonde hair. She's wearing black and white shoes, black pants, and a white t-shirt from Marineland that's got killer whales on the front of it.
Mark leaned forward and took a closer look at the front of her t-shirt. Damned if what he thought were tropical fish weren't killer whales.
You mind explaining...
Shut up!
Her right arm suddenly appeared from under her jacket. There was a gun in her hand.
Just keep driving.
Mark kept his eyes on the road, but managed to steal a couple of glances at the woman, Jane Smith, who was sitting in the passenger seat next to him and pointing a gun at his head. The gun looked a little on the small side, nothing more than a .22, if that. Her hand was shaking, and the fear he'd noticed before in her eyes had spread to the rest of her face. If he wasn't behind the wheel of his rig, Mark might have risked taking the gun from her. She didn't look like she'd be much of a shot, for one thing. And for another, Mark had a gut feeling she didn't have it in her to pull the trigger. But even if he was crazy enough to try taking the gun from her while they were out on the highway, not only did he risk getting shot, and at this range, who could miss, but he could wind up putting his rig on its side, and that kind of trouble he needed even less than a hole in the head.
I seen her. Skinny thing. Kinda pretty. Didn't know where she was going, but seemed to be in an awful hurry to get there.
So this girl's been around, thought Mark, sneaking another glance to his right to see if the second trucker's words had any effect on her. She didn't flinch, and the gun remained pointed at his head.
I gave her a ride from Huntsville to North Bay, but she jumped ship when I stopped for fuel. Stole my starter's pistol out of the glove compartment, too.
Mark lifted his foot off the accelerator and turned his head to take a better look at the gun. Sure enough, it wasn't a gun at all, but a reasonable facsimile looking just real enough to get people's feet and hearts racing. With slow, even movements to ensure the gun wouldn't go off and set his ears to ringing, Mark reached over and took it away from her. For a moment, her empty hand trembled wildly in the air. Then it moved to her head as she cradled her skull with both hands. He picked up speed again and drove along for a few kilometers in silence to give her time to settle down and collect her thoughts. There was obviously more to this whole thing than just some guy being rolled in a motel room, and Mark was curious enough to know what it was. By the time they reached Cache Bay, her sobs had turned to silent tears. Mark figured she was about ready to talk.
Now look, I can imagine you've had a pretty rough morning, but if you don't start telling me the truth about what's going on here, the next stop will be the OPB detachment in Sturgeon Falls. You want that?
She shook her head.
Good. Now, what's your name?
I told you.
Your real name.
Jennifer Mitchell.
Mark waited for her to say something more, but it was becoming obvious that extracting information from her would be like pulling molars.
And how did you come to be walking along the highway?
I was riding with my boyfriend on a run into Winnipeg. He asked me to come along to keep him company and to see a bit of the country.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem to be enjoying my company much.
Why not?
He was constantly watching the mirrors.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Even when we were parked?
Oh.
You see, Rick did an 8-week course with a school to get his A license, and he did really well at it. We figured, with the way companies are in need of drivers these days, he'd be able to get a job right away, but that's not the way it worked out. The best companies want drivers with experience, and you can't get experience unless somebody is willing to take a chance on you.
Mark gave an understanding nod. He'd heard similar complaints plenty of times before.
So, one day he met up with a high school buddy of his in a donut shop in downtown Toronto. Rick told the guy he was having problems getting work, and the guy said he'd see what he could do for him. A couple of days later, he calls Rick and offers him this honey of a deal.
Mark had a feeling he wasn't going to like this honey of a deal one bit.
This guy and his partners would loan Rick the money to buy his own used rig. On top of that, they promised to give him as much work as he wanted. 2 or 3 times a week to Rochester, as many times as he could handle.
Sounded great. But Mark knew that anything that sounded too good to be true usually was.
Rick was so happy to have the work that he never bothered to really find out what he was carrying. The boxes and paperwork said there were cameras inside, and since Kodak is based in Rochester, well...
Well, what?
When he realized there was booze and cigarettes inside the boxes, he didn't want any part of it. He told the guys who lent him the money that he knew what he was carrying for them and that he didn't want to work for them anymore. He promised to pay them back any way he could, and they seemed to be satisfied with that.
But...
But Rick didn't have any contacts, so even though he had his own rig and a bit of experience, it was tough finding enough work to pay them back on schedule. He ended up missing a few payments, and they came looking for him.
So these guys were following your boyfriend?
Yeah. They got him to do one last run. Then they were behind us all the way from Toronto. After I went to get us some breakfast this morning, I came back to find 2 guys working over Rick. One had a tire iron, the other one a knife.
And you stopped them?
Yeah, well, not really. When they saw me in the doorway, they stopped beating on Rick and came after me. I threw hot coffee into the face of one of them and managed to get away.
What about the blood on your clothes?
There was a lot of it in the room.
But if you managed to get away, why didn't you go back for Rick? Or at least call the police?
Rick was dead. Or at least I thought he was. And I knew the cops would be looking at me like a suspect, thinking I'd made up the story about the two guys. And then what about them? They were looking for me too, because they knew I was a witness and would be able to identify them.
Mark thought it might be true about them coming after her, but he didn't buy her fear of the police. Despite the few run-ins he'd had with hard-headed cops as a private detective, Mark knew they weren't all stupid. They would have been able to check out her story and would have started looking for the two men by now. She obviously needed help, so why wasn't she asking for it?
Is there something you're not telling me?
I wanted to get to the truck before they did.
The truck?
It was Rick's and my future.
The truck?
Yes. It was locked, but I wasn't going back to the motel room to look for the key. So I waited until they took the truck. Then I caught a ride with another trucker, hoping to catch up to them.
Her words were cut off as she suddenly became interested in the rearview mirror outside her window.
You really think you'll find them?
Yes, I do. In fact, it looks like they found me.
Mark took a look in his own mirror. There was a big blue Freightliner cab over in the left-hand lane with the name Jennifer painted in fancy lettering between the bottom of the windshield and the top of the radiator grille. There was smoke pouring out of the rig's twin pipes, and the driver looked to be in an awful hurry.
That's Rick's truck coming up behind us.
Fear began to creep up Mark's spine. If the truck coming up fast behind them was indeed Rick's, that meant the man behind the wheel was a cold-blooded killer. Even though Rick hadn't died, the two men had entered the motel room with the intention of killing him, which meant they were guilty of attempted murder at the very least. And if they were willing to kill a man to settle an outstanding debt, what else might they be willing to do to get rid of the only other witness to their crime besides the victim? Mark pressed down hard on the accelerator, and the rate that the Freightliner was approaching slightly slowed. Mark sighed, realizing he'd never be able to outrun them, even if he wanted to. He was loaded front to back with china and dinnerware for a restaurant supply company in Saskatoon. His rig and the 53-foot trailer it was pulling was already at its 80,000-pound limit, and there was no way he could stay at this speed for long. The other truck would overtake him in minutes. And if they knew that the girl, Jennifer, was in his truck, they might try to run him off the road. Once they'd done that, they could kill them both and make it look like part of an accident. But he reasoned, if they were going to try and run him off the road, they'd be in for a surprise. Because if Mark had anything on them, it was weight. A truck full of cigarettes and booze was no match for the tonnage amassed by skidfuls of china plates. He eased off the accelerator. No sense in burning out the motor just to postpone the inevitable. And the Freightliner started to catch up.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. What do you think they're going to do? Do they even know you're riding with me?
Although unlikely, it was possible they'd seen her get into his cab. Or they might have heard something over the radio. Then again, it was also conceivable that they were just in a hurry to get to Winnipeg, deliver the load, and sell off the truck. Mark checked his mirror and saw that the Freightliner was now even with the rear of his trailer.
Hurry, quick, get in the back.
What?
Get in the sleeper, I don't want them to see you.
She got off the seat, climbed into the sleeper, and pulled the curtains shut. Mark looked over his shoulder and saw that she was peeking out of a slit between the curtains. The Freightliner was just about even with him. Mark looked over at the driver. It was a young guy, unruly dark hair, dark glasses. His face looked a little red, and his white short-sleeved shirt had a huge stain around the collar and down the front. He was either an utter slob, or he'd recently had coffee thrown in his face. Mark was apt to believe the latter. Mark's fingers tightly clenched the wheel as he waited for something to happen. His knuckles had begun to turn white, and his palms were aching, but he wasn't about to loosen his grip. At last, something happened. The driver of the Freightliner smiled at him and gave him a little wave, just a friendly how you doing. Mark took a deep breath, eased off the accelerator again, and watched as the Freightliner moved ahead and then pulled over into the lane in front of them.
All right, you can come out now.
No, the other one's behind him.
Mark checked his mirror and saw a burgundy Buick LeSabre come up on the left, then tuck in behind the other truck.
That's their car.
So they would be getting rid of the truck in Winnipeg. Probably even had somebody lined up to strip it down and ship the parts halfway around the world. Mark watched the truck slowly pull away and decided not to chase after it.
Can't you keep up with them?
I'm not blowing my motor just to keep up with somebody I'll be catching up to later.
What do you mean?
Well, they're gonna have to stop sometime.
But what if they turn off before Winnipeg?
Mark thought about that a moment and then turned to look at her. Why is she so worried about the truck? If anything, she should be wanting to head back to Huntsville to be with her boyfriend, Rick. God knows he could probably use the company right now.
And just what is it with that truck, anyway?
What do you mean?
I mean, while your boyfriend is in some hospital wondering if his brain is ever going to work right again, you're riding cross-country after some truck. What's so damn special about that truck?
She climbed back into the passenger seat and leaned her shoulder up against the door before speaking.
We're engaged. We were going to get married as soon as Rick paid off this guy's loan.
But you said he was late making the payments.
Then we would only have to pay the money back to his parents.
What? You borrowed money from them too?
When his father found out the kind of trouble he was in, he offered to loan Rick the money to get him out of a jam. He mortgaged the house and gave Rick the money in cash.
Cash?
That's the way they wanted it.
Oh boy.
We were going to make the payment when we got back from Winnipeg, but they caught up to us in Huntsville and...
Why didn't you just give them guys the money and be done with it?
I'm sure Rick tried to, but I think he mentioned going to the cops a couple of times too many.
Oh, gee, you think that might have been a mistake?
How naive could this guy Rick have been? Or maybe he was just crazy. Or stupid. Or both.
So, instead of just taking their money, they decide to take the truck, the money inside it, and kill Rick, just in case he thinks about going to the police again. Oh, that's nice. Real nice.
Up ahead, the Freightliner rounded a curve and was gone. A moment later, the Buick following it also disappeared from view. That started her crying again. Mark felt bad for her. She seemed like a nice girl. And all her and Rick had wanted was a chance to get started on their lives together. And here were a couple of bad boys all ready to take advantage of two kids' dreams. Rick was probably clinging to life by a string in some hospital, and they were about to lose not only what they'd invested in the truck, but all the money the kids' family put up to help him out as well. At this rate, they'd be paying back their debts until the day they died, and even that might not clear it. And for what? So a few people could cheat the government and save a few bucks on their booze and smokes? Mark wanted to comfort her, wanted to say the right thing, but he was never good with words, so it was best not to try. On the other hand, it might be possible for him to help her, to actually do something for her. That was his strong suit, taking action. But what could he do for her out here on the highway? Just then, they came upon a long straight. Ahead in the distance, over on the right, was a truck stop. As Mark neared, he looked for the big blue Freightliner cab over in the lot. Sure enough, it was parked in one of the service lanes, taking on fuel. He looked at his own fuel gauge and saw that it was still 3/4 full.
I think maybe I could use some fuel.
He pulled off the highway and into a whole lot of trouble. Mark slowed his rig to a crawl as he neared the service area of the truck stop, giving himself extra time to think.
What are you going to do?
I don't know yet.
He had an idea or two, but no real plan. The blue Freightliner was parked in one of the fuel service bays, getting topped off with fuel. The Le Sabre was parked behind it, probably needing a fill-up as well. Mark looked over to the restaurant and peered through the windows to try and see what things were like inside. It was busy, which made sense considering the number of cars and trucks out in the lot. Slowly, a plan began to formulate in Mark's mind. It was the sort of plan that might get him killed, but it was the only one he had at the moment, and he might as well go with it. He turned into the lane to the left of the Freightliner, pulled his tractor ahead of it, then turned right, blocking the other tractor's exit route. Mark got out of his truck.
Hey, what you think you're doing?
I know this guy.
He climbed up on the side of the truck, pulled on the door handle, and looked in through the window.
I hauled a load for him last month, and I'm still waiting on the check.
The attendant nodded and busied himself with filling the Freightliner's tanks. Obviously, he didn't want to get involved in a dispute between two truckers, especially one over money.
Hey, where'd he go? Did you notice?
He's getting a coffee, I guess.
All right, thanks.
Together, Mark and Jennifer headed for the restaurant.
You know what you're going to do now?
I'm still not sure. I guess it depends on what we find when we get there.
Before going in the restaurant, he looked in through the windows.
Do you think these guys are good with their fists?
They didn't seem to have any trouble holding Rick down, and he's 6'1", 190. Even did some wrestling in high school.
If he was smart, he'd just call the police and wait for them to sort things out. But if he did that, one of the two would get away in the Buick, maybe even both of them. Besides that, he wasn't the kind to sit around and wait. He had to do something.
Do you think he'd recognize them if you see them?
I already see them. They're at the back of the line on the right.
Mark looked in the direction she nodded and recognized the driver with the coffee-stained white shirt. The guy standing next to him had to be the driver of the Buick.
So let's go.
Hey, hold on a second. Let me just think a minute here.
It was obvious he wasn't going to be able to hold these guys by himself. He needed help, and all he had was a restaurant full of truckers. But that might not be such a bad thing.
Maybe I could use that to my advantage.
The whole situation reminded him of the climax to the movie The Fugitive, where Harrison Ford finally catches up with the bad guy in a hotel ballroom full of people. Instead of confronting the guy in the ballroom, Ford's Dr. Richard Kimball tells the guy he'll be waiting for him in an adjoining room. That's just wrong. The only way to confront someone in a room full of people is to do everything in plain view of hundreds of eyewitnesses.
Here.
He gave Jennifer a quarter.
Call the police. Tell them that...
What?
Now, the truth would be too confusing to explain in such a short time.
Tell them there's a lunatic in this restaurant and you think he may have a gun.
Jennifer took the quarter and made the call. Mark took a moment to gather up his courage, then grit his teeth together and head into the restaurant.
You! You're the one!
The guy with the coffee-stained shirt put a finger to his chest and started looking around for the police.
Oh, May? You drive a blue Freightliner cab over with twin pipes, dark blue detailing, and the name Jennifer painted on the front?
Maybe. Who wants to know?
Well, the cops, for one. You're the guy who put a friend of mine in a hospital by driving him off the road and into a ditch near Armprior.
Where?
Don't play stupid with me. You heard what I said. He accidentally cut you off trying to avoid a car that pulled in front of him. You blasted him with your horn and he made the mistake of giving you the finger. So you ran him off the road and into the ditch. A guy with a wife and three kids now has a busted jaw, broken neck, and two cracked vertebrae. Eats his dinner through a straw, all because you wanted to get even.
The truckers at the nearby tables had all stopped eating. They were listening intently to Mark's story, even grumbling and heckling every once in a while.
Look, buddy, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and I don't want to know.
Don't give me that crap after your reckless driving put my friend in the hospital. You know, it's guys like you who give the rest of us hard-working truckers who drive by the rules a bad name.
Yeah, we're gonna let these guys pay charge.
His plan might actually work. While he couldn't be 100% sure, at least now Mark felt like the other truckers were with him.
Yeah, whatever. Come on, let's get out of here.
Mark didn't want it to get physical if he could help it. But if he didn't do something soon, the two of them would be walking right out of the restaurant.
Where do you think you're going?
Mark pushed coffee stain hard in the chest with both hands. The guy looked like he wanted to fight, but was so far resisting the temptation. Obviously, he didn't want to risk losing the truck, the money, and his load in some truck stop brawl over something he didn't know anything about.
Look, pal. I'm getting in my truck and getting the hell out of here. If you're smart, you'll step aside and let me go.
Not until you say you're sorry for what you did to my friend.
It sounded silly, Mark knew, but it was all he could think of at the moment.
Screw you!
Mark was all ready to push the guy again, but a strange thing happened. A group of truckers had moved in behind him, blocking the two guys' only way out of the restaurant. Apparently, drivers around here didn't take too kindly to fits of road rage, especially when they put one of their own in the hospital. Coffee Stain and his friend started to push their way through the crowd. The crowd pushed back. Without warning, Coffee Stain pulled a knife. Everyone started backing away. Everyone except Mark. He remained standing where he was and took a good look at the knife. In addition to being very big and very sharp, it was also spattered with blood. Rick's blood, no doubt.
Get out of the way. I don't want to have to cut you.
I don't want you to have to cut me either.
Good, and get out of my way.
No.
Coffee Stain took a step forward, and Mark took the starter's pistol from his pocket and pointed it directly at the guy's forehead. The crowd withdrew even further. Some were now scrambling out the door.
Take it easy, man.
You put my friend in the hospital, and now you want to cut me too?
Look, I just wanted to get out of here.
Drop the knife. On your knees. Both of you.
Mark took a look out the window. Still no sign of the police. He turned to the two men, now on their knees.
You know, guys like you really piss me off. For every 200 safe drivers on the road, there's one jerk like you who screws it all up for everybody.
Okay. I'm sorry, all right? Just don't shoot me.
Oh, I see. You want me to show you some mercy. Like the mercy you showed Rick in that motel room in Huntsville?
Coffee Stain's eyes grew wide and his face turned white. Jennifer stepped out of the crowd and stood at Mark's left.
That's right. I know what you did, and I'm here to even the score.
He had no answer to that, other than raising his hands in surrender. Mark ignored the gesture.
Ready, set, go.
Slowly, another darker stain began to appear in the middle of Coffee Stain's pants. At that moment, two police cruisers, lights flashing, pulled up outside the restaurant. Mark knew he would have some explaining to do, but not nearly as much as Coffee Stain and his friend.
Chapter 2. Offloaded.
Mark Dalton watched the last of the skids being unloaded from the trailer he'd been hauling and tried to get his dispatcher on the phone again. He called in as soon as he reached the restaurant supply company in Saskatoon, but the dispatcher, an old-timer named Bud with a surly disposition and a belly produced by the consumption of his namesake, said he needed more time to confirm the next load. So Mark had watched them unload the trailer, glad to see it delivered undamaged and on time. There had been a little trouble in northern Ontario, but after he hit the Manitoba border, it was smooth sailing the rest of the way.
Dispatch.
It's Mark Dalton, Bud.
Yeah?
I'm in Saskatoon waiting for my next load, remember?
Of course I remember. What do you think I've been working on the last hour?
Mark resisted the urge to say something smart. The last time he did, he found himself running back and forth between New Jersey and Toronto for 6 straight weeks.
Well, what you got?
Something special, just for you. Head over to Saskatchewan Place on Thatcher. There's a trade show just finished up there headed for Vancouver.
Mark smiled at the prospect of Vancouver. It was one of his favorite spots in Canada, and he wondered if he'd be able to spend a few days there before taking on the next load.
What's the load?
High-tech electronics. New fancy stuff. A lot of it ain't even on the market yet.
Mark had read something about that show in the Saskatoon Star Phoenix while he'd waited to call Bud back. Apparently, the show hadn't got the kind of turnout they expected, but organizers were confident the Vancouver numbers would be better.
What's the schedule like?
You got until Wednesday to get to BC Place. Plenty of time. For a guy like you.
Bud's remark wasn't lost on Mark. Mark had earned a reputation for spending time doing stuff other than hauling his load. Like that last little incident outside North Bay.
You know I always deliver.
Yeah, well, one of their regular drivers got called away on a family emergency. They needed somebody fast and reliable. I told them I only had you.
Mark wanted to say something smart back, but figured the cough was punishment enough.
Right. Talk to you on... Yeah, take care of yourself, Bud. Jeez.
When Mark arrived at the convention center, they were halfway done loading up the trailer. He and his Pete, affectionately known as Motherload, would be hauling to Vancouver. He backed up with the fifth wheel just short of the trailer's nose and hopped out of the cab to take a look at the merchandise he'd be carrying. A gray-haired man in gray pants and a black shirt with the logo of some electronics firm sewn over the left breast approached him. Colorful guy, Mark thought.
You Mark Dalton?
Yeah, I guess that makes you the shipper.
You could say that.
Mark was surprised that it hadn't taken him an hour to find the man in charge the way it usually does in situations like this. The two men watched as another skid of boxes was being lifted into the trailer. It seemed an odd way to ship special electronics, thought Mark. He'd done a few trade shows before, and things were usually all put into crates on wheels, so they could be easily pushed around the trade show floor. Another thing was the particular attention being given to the crates being stored by the barn doors.
You sure that load is even?
Mark didn't want to see an axle weight violation at the first scale he crossed. The shipper just looked at him as if he were asking a dumb question. And for a moment, Mark wondered if this guy was any relation to Bud.
We've been loading her up this way since Montreal and haven't had a problem yet. All the heavy stuff went on first, you know. Stuff like display stands and monitors. Everything that's going on now is all the lightweight, high-tech stuff. Those boxes are light as a feather.
Mark nodded, satisfied this guy knew what he was doing. Once everything was loaded, he hooked up the pigtail and the airlines and jumped into the cab to back it into place. He felt the shift in his seat once the kingpin locked into place. When he jumped down, the shipper was there to greet him, handing him a key.
This is for the big padlock hanging on one of the doors. You know, just in case you need to get into the trailer. I'll be flying ahead into Vancouver to prepare the show floor, and I'll be waiting for you on the loading dock on Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Now, what route do you think you'll be taking?
There was really only one highway to take when you were headed across the prairies.
Number one, all the way to Vancouver.
That's good, good. Here.
What's this?
A coupon for a free night stay at the Budget Motoring Inn outside of Calgary.
Huh.
They're one of the sponsors of the tour. He gave us a whack of these for our drivers and staff.
Well, hey, thanks.
I figure you should be there Monday night. I'll probably check with the front desk then, just to make sure you're on schedule.
Sure, okay.
He'd had a few perks driving special loads, and nothing beat paid accommodations and a private shower. It seemed odd that the shipper would be so concerned about him, since his was probably just one of a half dozen trucks that was hauling the show into Vancouver. But maybe he was hauling some pretty expensive cargo, and it was only right for the man to be concerned.
Here's my cell number in case you run into a problem.
Mark looked at the card. There was a name on it, Bradley J. Proctor, a job title, Special Events Coordinator. There was also a logo on it, the same as the guy's shirt, and a company name, Dynamatics.
That's about it. See you in Vancouver on Wednesday.
See you then.
He walked over to crank up the landing gear and then began his once around the rig. The barn doors were secured. It was a huge lock, the kind that could withstand the impact from a howitzer shell. Somebody would have to be pretty determined or have nuclear-powered bolt cutters to get past that, he thought. Or you could just use a key. Mark fished inside his pocket for the key and tried it. The lock opened with a snap, and Mark locked it up again. No sense driving away with the wrong key. He was once an hour outside Chatham, Ontario, before a call came over his cell to say that a shipper had given him a house key instead of the one for the load. With the rumble of the diesel, he pulled away from the dock. Strange how the shipper seemed particularly skittish about the route that he was taking. What other route would he take? Ah well, he thought. Let him be different. Shippers could often be on the eccentric side. But then there was also the free night stay at the Budget Motoring Inn outside of Calgary. Now that was different. Way different. In fact, it was almost too good to be true. Mark came up on the Budget Motoring Inn just east of Calgary early in the evening. It was a modern four-story building with about 100 rooms to it, and a parking lot that seemed to stretch out for kilometers in every direction. He parked his rig as close to the hotel as he could manage, which meant by the outside curb when you drive anything bigger than a Honda, and then pulled his overnight bag from the sleeper and headed for the hotel. When he stopped into the lobby, he had a fear that the woman at the desk might look at his coupon strangely, thinking he was trying to pull a fast one or something. It was a bit of a hand-done affair, the type of job printed from a home computer.
Welcome!
I have a coupon.
But the exact opposite happened. She looked at it and her smile remained unchanged. She set about checking him in.
Sign the register, please.
He signed it and she handed him an envelope containing his room key and some brochures. He was on his way to his room just a few minutes later, one of the fastest check-ins on record. The room seemed to be as far away from the highway as was possible. It was at the far end of the building and overlooked kilometer after kilometer of wide, open spaces. It was a nice room, nice view too, but he would have rather had a room that had a view of his rig. Oh well, he thought, the price of the room sure was right. He set down his bag and was about to slip the room key back into the envelope when he noticed that what he thought were brochures were actually more coupons. He took them out and inspected them. One was for a free dinner at the hotel restaurant, and the other was for free drinks at the bar. Mark let out a sigh and shook his head in disbelief. This was the best load he'd ever carried. He'd gotten some free stuff before, t-shirts and groceries, even a few free meals, but this one took the cake. Maybe there was a catch. He thought about that a while, but couldn't think of one. Maybe it was just the way drivers of show trucks were treated. He made a mental note to see if he could get signed up with a show like this once he reached Vancouver. When he arrived at the restaurant, the royal treatment continued. Although the place was full, he was escorted to a table at the far end of the room, away from the kitchen. He sat down, ordered a draft, and began perusing the menu. And then things got even better. Over the top of the menu, he noticed someone looking in his direction. It was a woman, a very attractive woman, and she was smiling at him rather coyly. Mark put down the menu and returned the smile. Her smile grew brighter, and she gestured for him to join her at her table. Mark got up from his seat without thinking twice and sat down at her table.
Were you going to dine alone?
Yeah, that was the plan.
He looked at her closely, almost inspecting her. She had long blonde hair tied up in a bun, blue eyes, high cheekbones, and full lips that framed a perfect set of teeth. She was dressed in a modest yet flattering gray business suit that did little to hide the fact that she had a body that was every bit as gorgeous as her face. Had this been a truck stop, her friendly nature might have had him wondering if she were a lot lizard, but they rarely worked a room by ordering dinner alone. She also looked a little too classy for that. She wasn't just dressed up like a businesswoman. She seemed to carry herself like one, too.
Well, I'm here by myself, too. It seems a shame for both of us to eat alone when we can just as easily do it together.
Here on business?
Not really. I design office interiors, and I was in Calgary consulting with a client the last 2 days. I'm heading to Regina tomorrow, but I wanted to get out of the city tonight so I could get a head start in the morning.
So you've got no plans for this evening?
Not yet.
Me neither.
They ordered a bottle of wine along with their dinner and they talked throughout. She seemed interested in his adventures on the road, and she made interior office design sound more interesting than Mark would have thought. He was distracted only once during dinner when he glanced out the window of the restaurant and noticed a white and gold rig coming to stop next to his, blocking the view of his trailer. Then a second rig, this one pale blue, parked behind him. It seemed odd that two rigs would park so close to his when there were so many other empty spaces in the mostly empty parking lot.
Am I boring you?
What?
You seem more interested in what's going on outside than what's going on inside.
Oh, no. Sorry, I'm just looking out for my rig.
Is something the matter?
She put her hand over his, sending a tingle moving up his arm.
No, nothing's the matter.
He checked to see if she was wearing a wedding ring, and was glad to see her ring finger was bare.
Good. Now, are you going to invite me back to your room for drinks, or will I have to invite you to mine?
Mark wasn't interested in more drinks since he'd be driving in the morning, but he did want her to join him in his room.
My room's fine.
It seemed to take forever to get to the room. The trek to the far end of the hotel, more like a kilometer than a few dozen meters. He fumbled with the key, but finally got the door open. It swung wide and he stepped aside, signaling her to enter first with a grand sweep of his arm. She made herself comfortable, taking off her pumps and walking about the room in her stocking feet.
Do you have any glasses?
For what?
Wine.
She pulled a bottle of fancy wine from her purse.
I see you came prepared.
I bought it this afternoon. I was going to drink it by myself tonight, but it'll be much more fun sharing.
He could nurse a glass of wine for a few hours. If things went well, and so far there was every indication that they wouldn't be spending all that much time drinking wine anyway. He went to the bathroom, took the covers off a pair of water glasses, and set them on the table.
Would you do the honor?
Sure.
He took the corkscrew, screwed it into the cork, slipped the bottle between his legs, and pulled.
To tonight.
Tonight.
The wine tasted good, and despite his best intentions not to, he took another sip, this time closer to a gulp. They made small talk for a while, and the longer she talked, the harder it was for him to follow what she was saying. She was still talking about office decorating, but he only knew that because he was able to recognize a few words here and there. The rest of what she was saying was gibberish.
Are you all right?
That's some good wine.
She walked around to the far side of the bed and sat down.
Why don't you come here and join me?
Mark got up from his chair and made his way to the bed. His legs felt like rubber, his feet made of cement. She encouraged him to make it the rest of the way by undoing the buttons down the front of her blouse. He made it to the bed, barely, and fell on top of it in a heap.
Whew.
You sure you're all right?
Just Just a little tired.
As he closed his eyes, he wondered why she was doing the buttons on her blouse back up. And as he spiraled down into what felt was going to be a long, deep sleep, he thought it curious that although they were going to spend the night together, he didn't even know her name. Mark awoke feeling like he'd been hit over the head with a tire iron.
Oh man.
Except the pain was mostly coming from the inside of his skull rather than the outside.
What the?
He had trouble remembering what had happened the night before, but as he lay back on the bed and closed his eyes, bits and pieces of the previous night's events began coming back to him. He'd gone to dinner and met a woman. Yeah, now it was coming back to him. He'd met a woman and she'd come back to his room to spend the night. She'd brought some wine with her. He had a drink, and then he'd fallen asleep. He wondered, no, hoped he had awakened at some point in the night, but that didn't seem likely. He was still lying on top of the bed, on top of the cover, with his clothes still on. He hoped she might be in the bathroom.
Hello?
No answer. He looked over at the clock. It was just after 6 in the morning, time to be going anyway. He sat up on the bed too quickly, and bright spikes of pain flashed behind his eyes. Mark had a feeling it was going to be a long, hard day. He had a quick breakfast, did his circle check, and checked out. No charge, and was on the road before 7. The rig seemed to handle a little different now. Not heavier or lighter, just different. He attributed it to his headache, which had now settled down to a dull throb that would likely be pounding his brain for the rest of the day. He only wished he could say she'd been worth it, but he couldn't remember. When he came up on the weigh scales west of Calgary, he saw the flashing light calling him in to be weighed. He came to a stop on the scale and waited. He expected he would be given the green light, especially since both tractor and trailer looked neat, and electronic goods weren't likely to lead to a gross weight violation. But then the yellow light flashed, and an inspector in the kiosk jabbed his thumb toward the compound for a closer inspection.
Damn it.
This could take an hour by the time they combed over every inch of the rig, even though he knew there was nothing wrong. He pulled to a stop on one of the pads outlined on the asphalt, hopped out of his cab, and waited for the enforcement officer to come out to meet him. The door of his kiosk popped open almost immediately, and the officer strolled across the compound toward him, making some notes on his clipboard.
What's the problem?
You've got an axle weight violation. That's over 1,000 kilos at the rear.
How much?
1,000 kilos.
No way. I've just got some electronics equipment in there, light stuff.
Let's have a look.
Mark fished inside his pocket for the key to the trailer. He found it and unlocked the padlock. He began pulling the doors, and all he could see was the officer shaking his head. Mark secured the door at the side of the trailer.
What is it?
I'm afraid somebody's been jerking your chain. Those don't much look like electronic equipment to me.
Mark came around to the back of the trailer and felt his jaw drop and his stomach turn. While the boxes near the nose of the trailer had been left untouched, the boxes that had been piled up at the back were all gone, and in their place were two sloppy piles of cinder blocks sitting right over the rear axles.
Well, at least it won't be too hard to even out the load.
He handed Mark a tape measure so he could help measure the axles to confirm the spread for his weight category.
Like I thought, move those blocks around some and you should be all right.
Yeah, thanks.
His mind busily recounted the series of events that led up to this point. One by one, he put the smaller pieces together until he was able to get a good look at the big picture. They'd put all of the expensive equipment in boxes at the back of the trailer so they could be easily unloaded by anyone. The shipper had asked him what route he'd be taking, then gave him a coupon for a free night stay at the Budget Motoring Inn to make sure he'd be there last night. The trucks parked around his rig had been there to block his view and to cart away the goods. And if he got suspicious, there was a pretty woman to distract him. And then she drugged him just to make sure that he'd be out all night long and wouldn't feel the urge to take a midnight stroll to go check on his rig. And on top of all that, they'd given him a key so he'd be the first person the cops would like for the job. They couldn't have played him any better than if he had strings. The gate receipts for the Saskatoon show must have been pretty bad. Maybe the numbers for the show had been bad all across the country. So they figured they'd steal the goods, make an insurance claim, and recoup some of what they'd lost on the show. Fine. Except they'd used Mark Dalton as their stooge. Maybe they wouldn't just try to finger him for the theft, but would put in a claim on his insurance policy as well as their own. That would send his premiums through the roof. Mark seethed silently in anger, waiting for the officer to hand him his violation and head back to the kiosk. When he was gone, Mark hopped back into the trailer and began moving the blocks around, cursing at each block as if it were to blame for all his problems. And then one slipped from his fingers and landed squarely on his toes. He didn't know what made him more angry. His sore toe, the shipper and Dynamax for pulling the stunt on him, or himself for falling for it like a stone. No, like a cinder block. Well, they almost got away with it. Almost. When he'd finished rearranging the load about an hour later, he limped back to his cab and went through the scales again, this time getting the green light. Then he pulled over onto the shoulder on the exit to the highway. Next, he got out his cell phone and dialed the number on the card the shipper, Bradley J. Proctor, had given him. There was no answer. He tried again an hour later, still no answer. He tried once more late in the afternoon, and this time got an answer.
Hello?
Bradley J. Proctor?
Yes?
This is Mark Dalton. I'm driving a load for you from Saskatoon to Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. I hope everything's all right.
Well, I do have a problem.
Yes?
I'm at the scales outside of Calgary, and I'm overweight. Hello? Are you still there?
You're overweight?
That's right. I've got a gross weight violation, and I can't get back on the road until I unload some freight.
You're overweight?
Yeah. Are you going to send another trailer to take some of my load? I don't want to be late for Vancouver.
No, of course not.
Well, great. I'll be waiting here for the other trailer, okay?
Yeah, fine. I'll send someone right away.
A little confused, eh, Bradley?
He hung the cell phone on his belt and went around to the back of the trailer where he opened up the doors. After taking the time to rearrange the load yet again, he closed up the trailer and locked it. Then he went to the cab, got his jacket, took his Louisville Slugger from its spot behind his seat, and took a walk into the field next to the coop. When he was far enough away to be out of sight, he sat down and waited. The sun had almost set beneath the western horizon, and the scales had been closed for the night, when a pale blue freightliner bobtailed up the ramp and came to a stop in front of Mark's rig. The pale blue color of the liner was unmistakable, the same one he'd seen outside the motel in Calgary. Mark watched patiently from his vantage point in the field next to the weigh scale, squeezing out the cramps that had formed during the over 2 hours he'd been waiting for someone to arrive. The driver of the freightliner got out of his cab and walked back to Mark's Peterbilt. He climbed up to take a look in the cab, and not finding Mark there, rapped his knuckles on the door. Getting no response there, he headed to the rear of the trailer.
Hello? Hello?
Mark could barely hear him but said nothing. At last, the man stood at the end of the trailer, looking around as if he thought Mark was off somewhere taking a leak and would be back any minute. The man was over 6 feet tall, probably weighing 220, 230. He wore a big cowboy hat on his head and looked pretty scruffy, like a real cowboy. From the way he carried himself, Mark guessed he was probably good in a fight. And since he'd shown up without a trailer, it didn't seem like he was here to help Mark lighten his load any. Mark guessed he might be able to surprise him, maybe even get in a good whack with his bat. But there was no way he'd be able to wrestle or brawl with the man. He was just too big. Mark decided to remain crouched down and hidden by the brush, biding his time. The cowboy thrust a hand in his pocket and looked to be fishing around for something inside it. Was it a key, Mark wondered? Then he fiddled with the lock at the back of the trailer and undid the lock.
So, he has a key too. Sure makes it easier to unload a trailer that way.
Mark stayed where he was, but got ready to move in a hurry. The man opened up the back of the trailer and swung the right door open. From his body language, Mark could tell that he was surprised by what he saw.
What the hell?
Before Mark had locked up the trailer, he had moved the cinder blocks forward and stacked the back of the trailer with pallets from the front so when the door was opened, it would look as if it were stacked front to back and floor to ceiling with electronic equipment. The cowboy stood there, staring up into the trailer in dumbfounded amazement.
Strange, huh? You cleaned it out yesterday, and here it is, full again.
The cowboy gave the boxes a slight push to check their weight. Mark was pleased with himself. He had weighed down the bottom three rows with cinder blocks and left the top three empty. Obviously, Cowboy knew something wasn't right here and decided to investigate. Cowboy grabbed hold of the left side of the door and pulled himself up into the back of the trailer. Mark jumped to his feet and bolted from the field, quickly moving across the strip of open ground between the field and the trailer. There was a loud noise from inside the trailer. The man inside had probably given the top boxes a push and had fallen over when they gave way. It was just the break Mark needed. When he got to the trailer, he grabbed the right door and swung it as hard as he could. If it didn't close in time, then at least he might be able to hit the cowboy with the door on his way out. but there was no bang or grunt of pain, and the door made it all the way closed.
Hey, what's going on?
Where's the stuff?
What stuff? What are you talking about?
The stuff that was loaded onto this trailer in Saskatoon. The stuff that's supposed to be on its way to Vancouver.
I was just told you had a weight violation and needed some freight offloaded, that's all.
So where were you supposed to put the freight without a trailer? You weren't at the Budget Motoring Inn last night unloading the freight from my trailer onto yours?
Not me.
Let me just remind you where you are at the moment, partner. I would imagine the inside of this trailer will get pretty hot around about middle of tomorrow. Probably be like a sauna in there. Especially after you relieve yourself at some point in the next day or so.
Someone would cut me out.
Maybe so, if I left you here. But what if I take this trailer to some back road and park it? Maybe someone would pass by in a day or two, maybe not.
You can't do that, man!
Oh, I can do it, and I will too. Unless you start answering my questions. All right, have it your way.
Okay, wait! Wait!
Where's the stuff you took last night?
It's in my trailer, just up the road.
All of it?
All the expensive stuff.
Thanks.
Mark lowered the landing gear, pulled open the lock on the fifth wheel, and began the process of uncoupling the trailer.
Hey, what the hell are you doing?
Don't worry, I'll leave a key and a note for one of the officers. You'll be out of here in the morning.
Bastard!
Yeah, that's just how I feel.
When he was done, he wrote a short note and taped it and the key to the door of the kiosk.
I'll see you around, buddy.
You better hope not.
He started up Motherlode and headed up the road. About 5 kilometers along, he came across the pale blue trailer off on the shoulder. He pulled off, stopped, and backed himself up to the pale blue. A few minutes later, he was hooked up and back on Highway 1 with his load once again trailing behind him. Mark pulled into BC Place late on Wednesday morning. He wanted to be there earlier, but there had been too many things for him to take care of that morning. He was directed to the right loading dock by a security guard and backed up the pale blue trailer up to the dock with little more than a bump. He hopped out of the cab and made his way to the dock. The shipper, Bradley J. Proctor, was waiting for him with a dumbfounded look on his face.
Hi, Brad.
The shipper said nothing. Obviously, he was a little surprised to see Mark there, seeing as he'd sent the cowboy to the weighscale in Calgary not to lighten his load, but to put out his lights.
Sorry I'm late.
Late?
Well, yeah, it's almost noon, and you said to be here in the morning. I had some trouble at the weigh scales near Calgary, but I called you about that, remember?
What are you doing pulling this trailer?
Why? What's wrong with it?
It's not the trailer we loaded for you in Saskatoon.
You know what, Brad? I think you're right. This one's blue, and the one you gave me was white. But it shouldn't matter too much to you. This is the one that has all the equipment in it.
Bradley was getting angry and motioned to a couple of the men on the loading dock. The men came forward, surrounding Mark on all four sides.
You can wipe that grin off your face, pal, because you're in a big mess of trouble.
Yeah, I know. Trouble seems to follow me wherever I go. But lucky for me, these guys are never too far behind.
Bradley's face turned white. The men surrounding Mark suddenly seemed to be too busy with work that had nothing to do with busting Mark up.
Sorry, Brad. I don't like to be late with my loads, and I really hate being somebody's patsy. It was a pretty good plan, and it would have worked, too. You just gave the load to the wrong guy.